you tired of the same old sports media? Are you tired of hot takes, arguments, and questions that are just completely off base?
Luckily, we have something for you. Touchdowns and Tangents. Of the people, for the people, by people, who care about the culture and all its concise commentary.
You're damn right we do. What's up, everybody? It's Kenneth Berry here. Another episode of Touchdowns and Tangents. Pete running a little late. Had some little business to attend to. And me and a special guest who are here were at El Tarasco's. And, man, I miss their burritos. Like, and their liquor. Like, haven't been there since... It's been years since I've been at El Tarasco's, right by my old high school. But, man, shout out to Londo High. Shout out to El Tarasco. Shout out to local businesses that keep the economy really going. Most importantly, Touchdowns and Tangents, we are here another week to give you some of the brilliance of the realness, some culturally concise commentary, you know, not always on time, but always when you need it, when you need to hear it, whether you're at work, thinking of ways not to beat the shit out of your boss, or on the way home from work, thinking of a reason not to drive your car off the freeway because, you know, L.A. traffic is already bad. And honestly, the money that you would get for the accident and insurance would probably be more than what you're making now. But don't do that. Just listen to us and laugh and, you know, we'll get through this together. Anyway. We're gonna get better gunshot. We haven't had gunshot like sound effects in a long time, and I'm not gonna lie, I missed it. Just not this one. This one sounds like a powder keg, but whatever. Anyway, special guest in the house, Ryan. Can I say your middle name?
I think it's been said before, so it's okay.
Ram, Ryan Andrew Mancini. You're a walking acronym. Congratulations. Mm-hmm. But not only congratulations, we're going to get to some NFL stuff in a little bit. But I think it's just good when you link back up with your friends after a while. And that's what part of this podcast is. You know, friendship, kinship, talking shit. I mean, you know.
Kinship?
Yeah, kinship.
Kinship.
Ha 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 ha. Kinship.
The knee.
Ha 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 ha. The knee. But nah, man. And don't worry, y'all. We're definitely going to get to some NFL stuff. But, Mancini, the last time you were here, you were sitting on some, hoping for some good news. Mm-hmm. And since we're all recent graduates, or at least I'm the most recent graduate, but everybody in the group chat pretty much is just like, all right, we're in different stages of our careers. We're figuring things out,
mm-hmm.
you know, adjacent to us and our issues. I want you to announce what you got going on right now. What's up with you, man?
Yeah, so I know that a while back, I think one of my earliest appearances on the show, I think you guys had referred to me as a freelance reporter. But I, for the last year and 3 months, I believe, or year and 3 months, no, year and 2 months, I believe, I've been working with. Is this my build-up? My Bon Jovi build-up?
Yep.
That's what I thought.
The fact that you knew this was Bon Jovi, I don't know who the hell this was. I'm just like pressing this button.
No. I it's Bon Jovi adjacent. It's like, I just remember the last time I heard it, I was like, ooh, okay. New soundboards, I get Bon Jovi, okay.
Yeah.
But anyway,
let me be in charge of the soundboard. I'm very childish and petty, and I know what sounds go. Anyway,
if you ever get the chance, check out Collider Live. They've got soundboards that are out of this world. Anyway,
interesting.
Zoobly Zoo.
No one's gonna get that reference. Bro.
Oh, believe me, if it was their show, they'd be playing the song from Zoobly Zoo, which is a song you never want to hear. Anyway,
I don't think anybody black knows that reference. Or Latino. Maybe a couple of Latino people. I don't know anybody black.
It's from Pittsburgh, and I've never been to Pittsburgh.
We actually have a show in Pittsburgh. So,
oh, really? You
know, shout out to them.
Okay. But anyway, I at that time when I was referred to as a freelance reporter, I was actually working with the Santa Clarita Valley Signal, which just this year turned 100 years old. And I've been working there for a little over a year, and I finally decided to make the next step in my journalism career. And starting on Monday, I will be with the Park La Brea News and Beverly Press on Wilshire Boulevard as a full-time reporter.
Bravo, man. Bravo. That is fantastic.
The commute will be a commute, but I got plenty of music to listen to, and I got this show to listen to, so.
And what's kind of been this whole process like of you trying to find a job that better suits you?
Well, I can certainly say I'm probably not the only young and recently out of college journalist who has been struggling to figure out what that next course, that next step is going to be. And, you know, I graduated a couple years ago. I was still working elsewhere, and then I finally hopped on board with the Signal after getting some advice from an editorial writer from the LA Times last year. And ultimately, it's just been about building up experience and just trying to get as many stories done across as many different subjects as I could. I think the interesting thing, too, is when we were going to school, we all were basically told you need to have a collateral or a minor, because that's going to basically kind of generate where your focus might go.
Even though they changed that rule and certain, like, business law, that was my minor. And when I came back, or actually, no, not even when I came back, like the next semester, they're like, yeah, those units don't count anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So that was fun.
But I think it's also, and this is where I'm kind of speculating a bit, I think it could also be like a fallback. And where it's kind of like, yeah, we know the journalism industry is not super hot right now, but we're not going to say that to you, so we're just going to basically kind of set you up so that you have something down the road that may or may not come to fruition. Because let's face it, I have a minor in political science, but that may not necessarily mean anything depending on who you're asking.
Yeah.
So, but no, it's been a difficult, you know, interesting variety of an experience. And yeah, I'm ready for this next chapter to begin. So I'll be playing David Bowie's new career in a new town pretty often. Which, by the way, there's no lyrics to that song.
It's just instrumental.
Yeah. Well, he was at a point in his career where he actually thought he had nothing left to say. So his songs had less and less lyrics. This was from his Low album, which I'd argue is one of his best albums ever.
Interesting.
It's what the background is on my phone, is just that side profile of him from that album.
Fam, that's dedication.
Somebody once thought that was Hillary Clinton, and I was a little
mixed with Johnny Depp.
I was a little offended.
That looks like Hillary Clinton mixed with Johnny Depp.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Like in what's the movie, Sweeney Todd, the pirate, or the barber,
Demon Barber of Fleet Street? Oh.
Yep. That looks like Sweeney Todd's kid.
He's actually, the funny thing is, this is actually from a movie that Bowie did where he played an alien.
Yeah, I believe it.
Called The Man Who Fell to Earth, which is an amazing movie with the recently deceased Rip Torn, R.I.P.
I was going to say that. He was in Men in Black. He was in a bunch of stuff. Rip Torn. And your name is Rip Torn. I'm sorry, but that's fantastic. And I'm going to laugh at it every chance I get. Shout out to Rip Torn, R.I.P.
They actually used aged makeup on him in that movie. And it seriously looked like what Rip Torn looked like now. It was really, really weird. Because I thought, oh, it's just Rip Torn. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. He didn't look like that at the beginning of the movie.
Wait, Rip Torn or Rip Torn?
Rip Torn.
Okay. Because I was like, this last name isn't Torm. But anyway, for someone who was in journalism, going through the rounds, and where you started, tell us about some of the dark days, because everybody wants to talk, like, everybody wants to be positive and all that, but tell us about the days where you almost gave up and why you didn't.
Well, I think that's the other tricky thing too, is if you're at our age, do you want to make the financial plunge and go out of the state and, you know, find journalism work that could work out or could not work out, where you're there for maybe a few months or a few weeks or a few days, and then you're like, oh, shoot, I was working for the only newspaper in this small town.
Or a few years. There's some people who have left and gone out in Iowa, Nebraska, everywhere else, and they probably not coming back.
Well, and that's my point. Those are the positives. You know, I mean, I've known people personally who they came from parts of the Midwest who came out here, and, you know, they thought they had a sure thing, and it ultimately didn't pan out for them, either because of their own problems or problems with management, et cetera, et cetera. In my case, you know, I still wanted to be relatively local, but at the same time, I would be more than willing to have gone across the country. I just wanted to reach the point where I thought, you know what, I don't want to get to the point where I feel like I'm completely out of options here. I'm going to find every option available. And that's ultimately what I did. And I swooped in with the right opportunity at the right moment. But yeah, no, I had ideas about, you know, working on something political, either in Sacramento or across the country. You know, I had all of these different ideas, but at the same time, you know, I'm thinking to myself, I still want to write. I still want to try and kind of perfect some of my abilities, and, you know, I kept thinking, oh, I might get to do some writing if I do something political or something else, but there's still the idea of, you know, as this show's all about context for the culture, you know, it's trying to find that right atmosphere to be in. And I think with this new venture, I feel like I'm really going to be in the right environment to sort of, you know, learn more about the city that I was born in. You know, I can't even say the city I grew up in, just the city I was born in. I'll admit I've done a little bit of homework.
Mantina, you were born in Beverly Hills.
I was born in Los Angeles.
Oh, I thought you were talking about specifically that city. I was like,
so,
damn.
So this newspaper is technically located in Los Angeles.
Yeah, it counts.
But its circulation reaches out to Hollywood, to Beverly Hills, Miracle Mile, Fairfax. So it covers a lot of ground. So, I'm, you know, just fascinated to know what it's going to be like also with my weekends back again, which I haven't had in a very long time, listeners.
Mancini on the weekends? Oh, man, it's a City Boy summer now.
Oh, I got
it's
friends
a City Boy summer championship reign all summer.
I got a lot of friends in Northridge that are like, wait, Ryan on a Saturday?
On a Saturday? You know, we were dorm mates. I remember some of those Saturday nights. And then the Sunday morning, me washing my clothes in the laundromat, like a, you know. And then you just walking in, strolling out of an Uber, and I'm just like, all right. Ain't no shame in that walk. That's not the walk of shame.
No. No, they weren't. Oh, no.
But anyway, when it comes to that, and you kind of touched on a little bit earlier about, like, you know, having a minor and, like, using it but not really using it and having it as something, as some fallback knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
When have you kind of had, especially as a journalist, when does some of that fallback knowledge really come in handy for you during this journey?
In a lot of ways, the new realization I've come to with the minor that I graduated with of political science is, I feel like you have a lot of journalists these days that would rather just sit back and ponder on things and question things before they reach kind of the ultimate conclusion, even though that ultimate conclusion is staring at them in the face the whole time. So one good example of that is when you hear a lot of media discussions about, you know, this was something that was being had for 2 years about in regards to Donald Trump, where, is he lying? You know, is this just a misstatement or a false statement, or is he just lying? And it became something to where you're thinking to yourself, did it really need to be 2 years for people to make a decision that he was lying about virtually everything and anything? And I came into journalism with the mindset of, I don't want to be pondering. I want to have that background so I'm not like, oh, well, why would a Republican or a Democrat do that? I know the histories of these ideologies, ergo I can determine why a decision would be made without needing to really nitpick. I'll still nitpick. I'm a journalist. I have to. In terms of my own personal experience, I'd say it proved pretty helpful in terms of understanding the political dynamics in Santa Clarita, which after this last election is the most purple that it's historically ever been. This was a district that voted for Hillary Clinton and yet kept its incumbent GOP representative at the time. And then 2 years later, removed that incumbent as well as our assemblyman with two Democrats, both of them. One of them, she worked with a nonprofit, and the other person, she was on one of the local school boards. And so trying to understand the shifting dynamics within Santa Clarita, noticing how people on the right in some areas were kind of gearing a little toward that, you know, Trump supporter vibe, which they didn't have years ago. And then seeing a lot more people, not just on the left, but just people in general, get up and vote. You know, I knew people personally that this was their first election, and they zeroed it in on, well, you know, I'm not in favor of Trump, so I'm going to vote for whoever's going to be trying to, you know, either stop him or deride some of what he wants to do as president. And that didn't come out of political, you know, people still think it's about partisanship and people hate each other because of politics. Personality makes a huge deal out of it. I mean, that's also why, you know, Pete and I have talked about Andrew Yang, like, and I'll get into this later with him, but he, you know, personality makes a big difference. And, you know, people saw this with Trump and thought, oh, I don't like that, or I don't want to back that. And so the fact that I was able to, and another example is a coworker of mine for the next 3 days who he's got basically the same background that I do, not to mention even further. He was on his Model United Nations team. He actually was our political reporter at one point in time. And his depth of knowledge is, you know, on politics is almost on par with mine. I mean, certainly him and I read from different people, but, and we've learned from different people, but at the same time, he knows the context. I know the context. That makes it super helpful in terms of determining why people make the decisions they do at the ballot box, or even why politicians say what they say. And instead, you know, sometimes you can have journalists like people that I've known professionally who they just don't get it, or they don't know, or what's a Democrat, what's a Republican, and you're kind of scratching your head like, wait a minute, you're the political reporter, and you're asking what's a Republican, what's a Democrat?
Now, so, to that point, cause you talk about the politics of politics. How about the politics of journalism? Because you've been... I feel like anyone who was a journalist can probably date back their writings to when they were in like elementary school. Mm-hmm. For me, like, I was writing all the time. I was in writing contests. I was winning them. And then we did, like, newsletters when I was in middle school. I wish I would have kept some of them because they were gold. But, like, you were in the high school newspaper.
Yeah.
Came right in the CSUN. Got the whole CSUN experience.
Yes.
The department experience, all that. And then even your time now, working professionally. So how would you kind of describe the politics of journalism from, like, someone who's a beginner, wants to get into it, someone who's in it and is learning the ropes and isn't a professional yet, and someone who is now blossoming into their own as a professional? How would you kind of describe that?
Well, I think if I were to go back in time, like, based on what you said, if I were to, like, go back in time and tell myself, Ryan, this is what you should know about the journalism industry.
And it would not ruin the timeline, because Avengers Endgame already proved that you can go back in time and not ruin the timeline.
That's what I've heard, yeah, yeah.
You forgot you haven't seen it.
It's whatever. But I am Iron Man. But I know that... spoilers. Or is it? I think that every young journalist, they need to figure out what the business is like from behind the scenes. And I don't just mean the editing or the drama. I really just mean the stability of whatever asset or aspect, rather, of the industry they're looking at, whether that's the production side, whether that's the kind of delegating side in terms of what's to be reported on and what isn't, and understand that it's not going to be, you know, as much as journalism in recent years is all about the First Amendment and democracy and, you know, phrases like democracy dies in darkness and stuff like that, there's still a business element to it, and there's still a lot more to it than just simply this idea of, well, we're here to tell the truth. It's still
the truth.
Exactly. Yeah. You have personalities behind the scenes. I mean, I watched Good Night and Good Luck not too long ago. Great movie. Also with Robert Downey Jr., by the way. And that's something that, you know, I saw it when I was in high school. It was also for a history class. Had someone shown that to me within the context of journalism, I think it would have stuck a lot more than it did. At the same time, you know, years later, they made us watch Network in a journalism class. And that's a classic. Have you seen Network?
I think I might have.
It's from the 70s. It's where you have the guy who, he basically has a mental breakdown on TV. He's a newscaster, and he says, I want you to go to your windows and say, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore. And people actually do it.
I'm pretty sure I've seen it.
Okay. It's on Netflix, by the way.
If I haven't, I probably lived it. So, yeah.
Oh, you watch this movie now, and the parallels with cable news today is...
Is it Orsonian comparisons?
Kind
of like when you look at Orson Welles' work, some of it, and you're like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
That's still relevant, and it's kind of creepy.
Yeah.
Because he had no way of knowing this.
Yeah. Oh, no. I mean, well, this was the 70s. Like, C-SPAN, I think, was just barely getting started. And that was the closest we ever got to anything remotely near cable news. But anyway, yeah, I think people who are fascinated with getting into journalism, they need to understand what's going on behind the scenes to sort of get a better idea and not be idealistic. Because, you know, I can imagine you were this way. I know I was kind of this way. Starting out in journalism, we all have this idea of the kind of person we want to be. And the fact of the matter is that you've got to build yourself up to that. Sometimes you can blow them out of the gate and be like, oh, whoa, you're terrific. Do you want to be assistant opinion editor? You know, like what happened with me, where I wrote one story and the staff was really pleased. And so they were like, you're on board, you know, keep contributing. And then you're hired at the end of the year, the end of the school year. But remember, that, too, was only based off of student journalists.
Yeah.
You know, and these are people who, as far as I can tell, thinking back, there's at least one of them that I can think of off the top of my head who's in journalism now, or at least on the reporting side. I know there's at least one person in that team who's on the photography side. Talking about, in terms of the reporting, it's our buddy Andrew.
Yeah.
But
then going to... Because I remember when we were, like, counseling and talking to high school kids and we would have little events.
Yeah.
But I think you have even more perspective now from that point. Because like you were saying, like, okay, you need to know the business. And then you even talk about, you know, you became an editor. But describe that grind. Like, once you, like, you're working to become who you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
But then you're also dealing with things as they are.
Well, and that's where what I said about personality can sometimes come into play, because I think, you know, you also get people who they've built up their careers, but they also have a personality to them And now they're at that point where they're in a position of power where they might be able to manage and even micromanage people in a way that may not be suitable for every reporter and his or her individual coverage. And I think that that's another thing that all young journalists need to remember. And this is something that I know we talked about a lot years ago. When I started out at CSUN, a lot of the other freshman journalists really wanted to be like television personalities, you know,
broadcast people.
Yeah. I had one person who, you know, she was super smart, very funny, very nice, but she was like, I want to be the next Wendy Williams. And I'm like, in journalism, you know, like it was very jarring because, you know, if you want to be a talk show host, that doesn't necessarily mean journalism. I mean, let's face it, in the last 20 years, there was a whole segment of our population where their journalism, their reporting, their news, they were getting from Jon Stewart or Stephen Colbert, which, don't get me wrong, I kind of was too. I thought they were hilarious, but I wasn't just solely using them as a source of my understanding of what was happening in the world. And you had a lot of people who did, who got into this business and basically thought, oh, I can do that. That's easy. And it's not. That's just the thing. You know, these were guys who were comedians, by the way. You know, I don't think they ever knew. I don't think Jon Stewart ever knew he was basically going to have to one day fight for the men and women on 9/11 to basically help them get the health care they deserve.
And it's sad because the person he was defending and fighting up there with, he died a couple days later.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think you need to kind of get into the field with a little bit of an open mind. At the same time, you also need to do a lot of reading from people that have a very solid reputation and they're not contradictory in any way. Because, you know, you can still have journalists that you like that, you know.
You know, they're kind of on the extreme side. They're good at what they do, but mm-hmm. you can't then apply what they do to you and then replicate that because it won't come out the same way.
True, but at the same time, you can also have, like, for example, who's one of the big go-tos in terms of who people aspire to for journalism? Bob Woodward. Because they hear, they don't actually go back and read or even watch All the President's Men, but they hear about him and they hear about what he did with Carl Bernstein and think, well, that's who I want to be. Now, what gets left out of that whole story is the fact that that was 40 years ago. What's Bob Woodward been doing since? And before his Trump book came out, which I actually do recommend people check that out, it's actually only the Bob Woodward book that I have. I have seen All the President's Men. I've watched it. I love it. But, you know, you can't get into the field thinking you're going to be, you know, bringing down corrupt presidents and, you know, speaking truth to power. And especially in today's day and age where facts aren't facts anymore. And, you know, you can have your alternative facts and whatnot.
Or your fact-adjacent facts.
Exactly. Or fake news.
Facts that people, they're widely accepted that they're facts.
Mm-hmm.
But then once someone who's just totally suffering from, not ignorance, but what's that term? When you essentially, like, damn it. It's not righteous indignation. I forget the term, but right. Cognitive dissonance. There we go.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there's a lot of people suffering from cognitive dissonance, and the people who consume media
mm-hmm.
don't necessarily realize that it's two sides of the same coin sometimes. Mm-hmm. Or like, the people that you see on Fox are probably friends with the people who work at CNN. They don't understand the relationships and everything behind the scenes. They mm-hmm. only see what gets talked about, but they don't do any further research. Like,
yes.
They see a fact and they take it as fact, and their whole argument mm-hmm. and their talking point is that fact.
Correct.
But they didn't actually do any other research.
And this is something that I've had to deal with a lot in the last year in terms of people in my neck of the woods, where they get it from one source and one source only, ergo, oh, it's accurate. It's got to be right because it's coming from a news source, you know, whether it's a radio station or a cable network like Fox News. With me, I absorb literally everything. You know, I'm taking in every bit of objective media. You know, growing up, I was looking at what, you know, both more liberal publications and what conservative publications were saying because I did want to get both sides of the story. The problem is that it reaches a point of proselytizing and also just being outright false. Not to mention you have to look at the associations of the journalists in that field. You know, and I know this is something we could get into that we're probably not going to talk about on air, where you basically...
I'm down to talk about anything.
You have to look at the reputations of these journalists, and when you find out they, you know, said something racist on Twitter or advocated for, you know, sexual misconduct, it's kind of like, well, wait a minute. Your credibility is a little hinky now, you know.
Hinky.
Oh, yeah. And in terms of, you know, like a left-wing reporter, the issue there is that, well, anybody can make fun of, you know, the president, whether it's George Bush or Donald Trump. And it starts to get monotonous and boring after a while to where you're like, this isn't really funny anymore. Or you're not making any compelling arguments because anybody can make this argument. And so that's when you decide, okay, I need to go to the next step. I need to look at the actual hard evidence to build up whatever conclusion I want to come up with of the current day. And in Bob Woodward's case, a lot of criticism he's gotten is being known as the sort of as Washington, D.C.'s stenographer. That's what some journalists have referred to him as. And these are people that respect him and still think a lot of his work is very brilliant. But they're also probably doing their own research and realizing maybe he's doing stuff behind the scenes, whatever. And so the stories aren't like the way it was in All the President's Men. Now it's more like, well, because in D.C. there's also like the social status and being a journalist in D.C., you've got to, you know, you can't just piss everybody off. Otherwise, you know, you won't get into all the same parties you were led into last year, you know. And I'm not saying that's what Bob Woodward's doing at all. I'm just saying that those are reputations that do follow some people, and those are accusations that I've heard made towards him. At the same time, he has done some outstanding reporting, you know, but I don't aspire to be like him because I am my own person, and this is what every journalist needs to realize. They are their own person. You know, I've fallen down that trap of wanting to be similar to other journalists. But I've realized, no, I can read their work and learn from what they did and their own personality and their own understanding of the world and of American history and politics and help that in coming up with my own conclusions. And so, and that's kind of what I advocate for anybody, you know, pick the right people, read from them, and build yourself up from there.
Yeah, good advice.
So I know I sounded a little angry just then, but
I hinted some aggression. I was like, "Are we going to talk about what I think we're going to talk about?"
Oh no!
Hypothetical in a hypothetical sense, because that would take about 4 or 5 episodes.
I'm not going to go full bore into the dark sides of.
Just pull a Mace Windu and just tap into it.
Why did you make me have to remember the prequel trilogy?
Because it's a purple lightsaber, and he's the only one to ever actually properly use the dark and the light.
So, yeah, but that was introduced after the movies.
Doesn't matter. It's still
like,
purple lightsaber.
Literally, he just went to George Lucas and said, "Can I have a purple lightsaber?" And George Lucas was like, "Yeah, sure."
And doesn't matter.
He got a purple lightsaber.
Doesn't matter.
Fun fact.
The facts are great, but the story is even funnier.
Can you guess who in the original expanded universe got a purple lightsaber?
Don't say Jar Jar Binks.
Her name starts with a J.
I think I know who it is.
She's not in the new canon whatsoever.
I'm definitely.
Although her twin brother kind of is. See, this is fun.
we'll put a pin in that. But what was the answer? Because I'm not.
Jaina Solo.
Yeah, I would have never got that.
Her brother became Sith. Yeah.
I forgot her name, so I'm saying I would have never remembered it. But we're gonna take a quick break from that because gonna put a pin in the whole journalism politics thing for later. But we're actually gonna touch on something that a huge part of this podcast is about, and that's football.
Football.
Not American. Just football. Not football. They make way more money. But anyway, so our poll, NFL Street.
I don't think there's any ice in this.
Damn, sir. That I didn't even tell him to do that. He just did that.
So I heard all about that last week, and I was just like, oh, my goodness.
Let's talk about it indeed. Oh, so, you got horchata with ice in it, but, she gets Sprite with no ice in it.
Oh, sometimes you can have it with ice.
But, she just gets Sprite with no ice in it as a default, and then adds ice later. That makes up for it.
She adds the ice later on.
Yes.
Okay. See, that was an element that I think
she
missing.
She gets Sprite with no ice to begin with because she thinks, she says the ice takes up most of the cup, which in a lot of cases, it is true.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm getting a Sprite.
And just in every case, that's true. That's how physics works.
Yeah. But, okay, now you're on her side. Jeez, relax.
No.
But most of the time, I'll get a little bit of ice.
Right.
If it's a situation, but no, I'm talking about she'll go to self-serve soda machines and not get any ice.
Right.
And then go back and get a little bit of ice. And then things the Sprites, that Sprite has a 2-minute shelf life.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just be honest. But anyway,
2-minute. Whoa. 2 minutes.
Sprite gets flat really quick. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Because I've had moments in the past, many years ago, back when I still drank soda, where, I would get the soda with no ice, but that just depended on how I felt. I didn't always do that.
She does that as a biblical mission.
I know. It's
She's not letting that go. Hears this, she's going to be really mad at me.
Oh, and you guys aren't letting it go either.
We're not letting it go. We're just broaching.
I also just remember laughing really hard when you guys were who would put ice in beer? And she's like, I'm not advocating for that.
I was okay, it's a slippery slope.
It is. No, it's true.
It starts with Sprite, and then next thing you know.
Well, okay, what if it's Coke? What if it's Coca-Cola? And you don't put any ice in there, you just put the Coke in the cup, you put the lid on, you drink it, and that's it. Then what do you do?
That gets flat, too.
But that's the thing, though. It doesn't
get... just give me 2 or 3 drops of ice.
It's not like it gets flat, though.
Have you had flat Coke?
Yes, I have.
So imagine not having any ice and drinking it. And let's say whatever system you got it from isn't necessarily the coldest.
So you're saying that the ice maintains the carbonation of the soda?
Yeah.
Even if... Isn't one of her arguments that the ice is gross?
No, she's like, the ice takes it too much, and then it's mostly ice, and you only get a little bit of juice in the water. The ice sucks up a lot of the soda, so it's like a self...
Well, and
fulfilling... It's a self-defeating prophecy.
And don't forget that sometimes when you get the soda in your cup... I know you want to get off topic, but...
God!
I have to make this point, too.
Is this how everybody feels about me?
Hey, this is a subject I'm...
We all deal with it, though. We all deal with this, though. Because everybody's like, do I want to get soda?
Right.
Especially if you get it from a drive-thru and you know how much ice they're going to put. Just give me 3 ice cubes.
Not to mention,
giving you 5 or a whole...
When you're going to those dispensers, you're getting, water and something else or club soda and something else into your cup.
Yeah,
there's been times where I've basically gotten brown water when it's supposed to be iced tea.
That's nasty.
It's like from the Goonies. It's gross.
By the way, I saw a meme that said Stranger Things. It's just the Goonies.
Yeah.
And not the X-Files, but the
Goonies. Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Oh, X-Files meets the Goonies.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that's offensive, but it's accurate.
But how's it offensive?
I was like, because they really used, they dug deep and got the X-Files and mixed it with the Goonies, and I'm like, you're not wrong.
Yeah.
But speaking of not being wrong, the poll for NFL Street versus Blitz, 53-47, more people liked playing Blitz than NFL Street, which is shocking. I mean, Blitz was really fun, and you could literally do wild shit, like hit people late after the whistle, punch cheerleaders, all types of wild, crazy shit. Like, the only thing up was that was in the game with Lawrence Taylor, where they were doing coke and steroids at halftime. That was a crazy game. But, yeah, NFL Street won on Twitter, because NFL Street was ultimately the better game and had the better soundtrack. One of the greatest soundtracks of all time is NFL Street. You can go on Spotify and look it up. Trust your video games. Also, Russell Wilson, we agreed, should never perm his hair again. Just don't do it, man. Like, don't go out looking like one of the DeBarges. It's just not a good look.
I gotta see what this perm looks like.
Oh, you're gonna... It's bad. But speaking of bad, Madden ratings. So, a lot of people were pissed off about their Madden ratings, as they should be. Derwin James was a first team, was a rookie All-Pro, and somehow, in his second year, isn't an 90 overall and doesn't have seven. His tackle rating is like a 77. That makes no sense. Like, he played everywhere. That literally makes no physical sense. Cats like Ndamukong Suh are considered defensive ends because the Bucks, they switched to a 3-4, but Ndamukong Suh is a defensive end, and he's like an 81 or 83, which really makes no sense because he has like every pass rush arsenal available and has never really been allowed to just straight up play like, okay, let's put you at, let's just strictly put this person as a pass rushing three technique. That has never been the case with Sue. He's always played specialized roles, had to take on triple teams, double teams, all that, this, then third, and whatever. So the fact that he was kind of rated low was really gross to me because he's still, I think, an elite defensive tackle, one of the better defensive tackles. You cannot block that man one-on-one. But, hey, it is what it is. Hopefully it works out.
Yeah, know? This is a perm. I'm also looking at an old picture of that's him by comparison. I know, yeah.
I was about to say, that's the wrong one. You got to see the new one. You got to see the Soul Glow one when he was at the ESPYs. Oh, my God. Whew. But, yeah. So, also, player designation positions. That was a beef I had with Madden because you got guys like Chris Jones, D tackle, but he played defensive end pretty much his whole career in the Chiefs 3-4 defense, and now he switched to a 4-3 defense. And I think he's only like a 91, but the dude had like 15 and a half sacks. How is he only a 91? He should be like closer to a 97. For being honest, he had an elite year and did a lot of athletic stuff that a defensive tackle his size should not be doing. But I will say with Madden, they did a good job with showing how athletic a lot of these offensive linemen are now more than ever. Like some of these guys running 4.8s, 4.9s, like they have almost 80 speed. They're faster than some of the guys that they're going to be blocking. And some of their blocking is trash. But hey, they're learning and developing. But the big beef that I saw was with wide receivers because wide receivers are divas and they were pissed off. I mean, DeMarcus Lawrence was insanely pissed off because he should have felt like he should not have been an 89 overall. Keenan Allen was also an 89. But here's why I agree with both of them, because DeMarcus Lawrence is a premier pass rusher and should at least be like a 93. And the fact they had him at 89, I think they had J.J. Watt close to a 97. Like, J.J. Watt's like the John Cena of football, and it's really annoying. It's like, he's great, he's good, but he has other guys around him, and most importantly, he's not getting 20 sacks a year like he used to. Like, he'll maybe get you 12, 13. He's still good, but he's not that much better than a DeMarcus Lawrence, who's coming into his prime and is still doing great things. He definitely should be high, and especially since DeMarcus Lawrence has more sacks than J.J. Watt in like the past 3 years, would definitely give DeMarcus Lawrence somewhere in like the 90, no higher than like a 95, though. 93, 94 if you're being generous, but a 93, a 92, 93 is fair for DeMarcus Lawrence. Keenan Allen, I think, is better than a guy like, and not just because he's white. I really like Adam Thielen. I think he's a top 10 receiver, but I think Keenan Allen's better than him because he's been doing it longer and had more injuries and isn't as fast, and that plays a role when you're a receiver. Thielen and Diggs are seen as the best wide receiver duo, which I agree with, but I don't see how Brandon Cooks, who's had 1,000-yard receiving every year of his career pretty much with three different teams, still in his prime, and ran like a 4.31 or 4.33 coming out of college. It was like a